from USA Today, former Sacramento Bee writer, and beautiful mane of red hair, the one, the only, Samuel L. Amick. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Hi.
Hanging in there.
I didn't get the middle initial right, did I? It's not L, is it?
No, I mean, but it was one out of 26 were your odds.
Good point.
Not very good.
Great point.
But no, it's an R, not an L.
We had Darren Collison on about 10 minutes ago, and one of the questions asked was, are NBA players allowed to vote for themselves in the new voting? And, of course, the answer was yes. I thought it interesting that not just Darren, but Willie Cauley-Stein and Ben McLemore all got at least one vote to start the All-Star game, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to sound like I'm stumping for us media schmucks who always get criticized.
But you're right in what you're about to say.
Yeah, I mean, we always get killed that we get it wrong. My goodness, the one guy who comes to mind, and he's not alone, but Kyrie Irving has said in the past that he doesn't think the media should have a vote. And if anybody missed it, one of our guys at our place actually compiled kind of the most absurd among the player votes. I think I retweeted it on my Twitter feed. But it's just, you know, the players, bottom line, obviously a lot of them didn't take it seriously at all. Now, in the end, the good takeaway is I do think they got it right in terms of the end result with, you know, different things they voted on. There was a legitimacy to, you know, enough guys took it seriously that it did serve its purpose. And I think it did fix kind of the Zaza Pachulia type component with the voting system change that they were trying to fix. But I actually was texting with a guy from the league about it yesterday and just saying to him, like, my God, can you imagine if reporters had voted for some of the people who got voted for with the, you know, what the players did. So kind of disappointing, and maybe the transparency will correct it going forward. I don't know if the players will ever care about getting criticized on that kind of thing, but it was just kind of an embarrassing look, I think.
Well, and I just went down your timeline. That's where I saw it yesterday. I couldn't remember his name. Bryce Johnson got two votes. Not one, but two votes. It's interesting because Bryce Johnson has never played in the NBA. So there's that, Sam.
The best part is that means that Bryce didn't vote for Bryce.
Right.
Somebody else voted for Bryce. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's right. Hey, here's the good news. I'd much rather talk about this voting today than the other voting.
Oh, dear Lord.
Things could be worse.
Danger Will Robinson. Nate, take over.
Oh, yeah. That's a perfect time to flip it over to me, too. Sam, I mean,
oh, by the way, not to interrupt you, Nate, we have a nice interview with Steph Curry on our website today talking about President Obama. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
I read some snippets of that, actually. It is really good. It's been kind of interesting to watch the NBA as a league. I mean, from the top down and the players, too, just the way that they've all approached this. I mean, I guess that's where I'll go with it is why is the NBA so far out in front of this type of stuff that the other leagues aren't?
Clarify that for me a little bit, Nate, because I threw you guys the curveball. Which far out front of which topic here?
Well, you know, politically speaking, the NBA is a really progressive organization, whereas, I mean, most leagues, the NFL and Major League Baseball, tend to try to stay as far away from anything politically as they possibly can, where the NBA, they get right out in front of it, and they're pretty visible.
They do. I think the obvious part of the answer is the demographics. I mean, you have an 80-some-odd percent African-American league. You also have, I think there's a different element, you know, NFL players have helmets on. They tend to be, you know, you got 50 plus guys on a roster, whatever it is. It's less personal. I think the voices get watered down a little bit, and then, you know, the demographics are different in the NFL. NHL, obviously the pendulum swings even farther the other way, and baseball is kind of in the middle. But it's been interesting to see it evolve because it's not like it's, I mean, it's not even close to being simply the, you know, the minority aspects of the NBA speaking out. I mean, it's Steve Kerr, Stan Van Gundy, guys like that have been the most outspoken in the entire league. Greg Popovich. I think part of it is the heart and soul of the leadership. I know that sounds kind of corny, but going back to David Stern's tenure, he was an outspoken guy who didn't always just keep it with basketball. And Adam Silver has been the same way. You know, he has kind of his legacy. I don't know what the word I'm searching for is. You know, his legacy got off to a very good start when he kicked Donald Sterling out of office, so to speak, with the Clippers situation. And that was a loud statement from the league that, you know, there was not going to be any tolerance when it comes to any sort of discrimination. So I think all that stuff comes into play. And then over time, what we've seen in the past 8 years with Obama in office is an unprecedented connection between the basketball community and the president, and not just because it was the first African-American president. You know, certainly he's a huge basketball fan. I mean, huge. You know, Adam Silver has talked about how Obama could sit there and break down the Charlotte roster if you want him to. I mean, he knows the game. And we actually, I know I keep plugging stuff. We've got a Jeff Zilgit, my colleague, did a really good piece, not only with the Steph Curry stuff in there, but LeBron, Adam Silver talking about Obama, and you get a sense of these relationships, a real strong connection between the NBA and the White House these last 8 years.
Well, and speaking of votes that maybe went a way you didn't think they would, Russell Westbrook, God, I always have trouble with that name, Russell Westbrook does not get into the starting lineup. Steph Curry does. Do you feel like that's as big of a snub as some of the things you're hearing?
Yeah, I do for sure. It's funny because, not to pull the curtain back too far, but yesterday we always run into a pickle with All-Star votes getting released at our place because we still have a print product to worry about. And so we end up getting a sniff of some of the results early, and it kind of takes us out of the news-breaking game a little bit, if that makes sense. And so bottom line, like I, you know, I've been given a strong indication that Russ was in and I mean out and Steph Curry was in. And so I figured I wouldn't waste any time. And I started banging away on a column, kind of giving my 2 cents. I think it's absurd. I mean, it's not, there have been worse transgressions in the All-Star game. Steph is obviously beyond an All-Star caliber player. It's just disappointing to see, to me, Westbrook, I wanted to see him in the starting lineup because honestly, I don't think he's going to win the MVP award, nor do I think if the season ended today that he should be the MVP. But it's just the idea that history potentially might show that he averaged the triple-double and he, not only was he not the MVP, but he wasn't even an All-Star starter. I think that's unfortunate. And with Steph, you know, again, really good numbers. We get too caught up in the narrative. Yeah, he's not as good as last year, but there's, you know, a lot has taken place. You're sharing the ball with a former MVP and Kevin Durant. But he just shouldn't have been in the starting lineup. I you know, the fan vote rather was the tiebreaker. You know, I don't know if there was a way to do the system differently to avoid something like this, but to your question, yeah, I think Russ and James should have been in there. I mean, they're 1-2 by almost everybody's account in the MVP race. So, you know, you would think that would reflect itself in the starting lineup.
Well, normally this is the point where we wrap up the interview and I plug some of the stuff you have coming up, Sam, but you basically took most of the interview and plugged it on your own. So,
Don't give me a hard time.
I'll just say you're a good guy, and you should follow you on Twitter, and you do good work, Sam.
The best guy, Sam.
The most tepid. Support there every day. I get more love when Katie's on the show. When Katie
wow.
See?
That's crazy.
This one's on you, Dave. I'm sorry, man.
All right, Sam. You'll follow Sam Amick on the old Twitter machine, and he does have some amazing, wonderful work coming up. Just follow him online for all the links and fun stuff. We always appreciate your time. Thank you, buddy.
All right, boys. Have a great day.
All right. Take care. We will take a break. When we go to break, listen up. You'll get your chance to text in for Monster Jam tickets. And when we get back in 5 minutes, we'll wrap up the show and we will finish up giving away your own bay at Top Golf. You and 5 friends this Sunday. All our qualifiers standing by. We're going to call one of them. Let them know they won. We're doing that next on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHTK.